Good morning. My name is Brian Cook, and I represent the relator, Willie Johnson. May it please the court. The central issue in this case is whether or not the respondent made every reasonable effort to conduct a probation revocation hearing prior to the expiration of Mr. Johnson's probation. I submit to this court that the respondent did not. On June 1st, 2016, the respondent received a violation report alleging that Mr. Johnson had violated condition number one laws and condition number six drugs. In addition, this violation report also notified the respondent that Mr. Johnson had an earned discharge date of November 19th, 2017, and an optimal discharge date of September 1st, 2016. Despite being put on notice that Mr. Johnson's probation was nearing expiration, the respondent took no action for nearly 2 months. The respondent did nothing until August 29, 2016, when the respondent entered an order suspending Mr. Johnson's probation and also setting the first revocation hearing for October 7, 2016, which would have been just 2 weeks shy of his earned discharge date. I should go back and add that because the respondent took no action for 2 months, Mr. Johnson did accrue an additional month of earned compliance credit for the month of July.
How does he earn credit when the probation has been suspended and there's an existing violation report?
Sure. The violation report was submitted on June 1st, 2016. Under 559.036, if the court does not take any action, if the court doesn't...
What about the suspending of the probation?
Right. Well, that didn't happen until 2 months after the submission of the violation report.
But you're not counting any months after the suspension. And page 11 of your appendix shows that they calculated that the earned discharge date was the 20th of October, even giving no credit starting in August because supervision was suspended. So you're not claiming
right.
You got credit for the months after the suspension, but you're saying, considering the months prior to the suspension, October 20th was your date.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's all I'm counting. Instead of holding a revocation hearing on October 7th, the respondent made the decision to continue the case, not to a date before October 20th, but instead to a date 6 weeks after October 20th, to December 2nd. So I would submit that based on the fact that the respondent took no action for nearly 2 months after receiving the violation report, the fact that the respondent had almost 4 months upon receipt of the violation report to hold a revocation hearing but failed to do so, and then continued it when the respondent had an opportunity to continue it prior to the expiration date, but instead continued it 6 weeks after.
In regard to that, he had another pending case, and at least it appears from the record that he wanted to try to resolve the probation revocation and the pending case at the same time, correct?
No, I don't think is reflected in the record. The respondent has made new statements, which I believe are outside the record.
Well, this is an original writ case, so
right.
if there was a legitimate fact issue as to whether or not the defendant consented to or requested a continuance, or that was the basis for the trial court's decision, wouldn't it be rather than to guess at what the truth is, to appoint a master or have this court take some evidence as to what was said at that hearing?
Perhaps it would. I would refer the court to the respondent's order denying my motion to terminate probation. In my motion to terminate probation, I allege that the respondent continued the case on the court's own motion. In the order denying my motion to terminate, the respondent states, "This court continued the case." Nowhere is there an allegation that I consented to it or that I requested the continuance. Now, that being said,
did you request the probation violation hearing be heard at your bond hearing, the bond hearing?
I did not.
Isn't it reasonable then for the court to take up a pending motion and then take up the next issue at the next court setting?
Perhaps it would have been, but essentially what happened is after the motion for bond reduction was denied, what we had hoped to do was to immediately get Mr. Johnson into a treatment program, come back for the revocation hearing the following day, and present that to the judge in the hopes that that would persuade the judge to continue him on probation.
So basically, what you're saying is you had to step back and rethink how you wanted to proceed after the bond hearing was your bond motion was denied.
Right, but after isn't that something that
you and your client wanted then?
Not necessarily. It wasn't something that we asked for. I was simply told by the court, I am not going to take any action on the probation case until the new case has been resolved. And I was very careful in response to that to say nothing.
Well, now, aren't there trial judges that feel that it's not fair to defendants to try a laws violation in the context of a revocation using hearsay and on a minimal standard of proof when the defendant hasn't waived the right to a trial by jury and a high criminal standard of proof on the same charge?
I certainly don't disagree, and I think in many cases that may be fair. However, just like in State X. Charles Strauser v. Martinez, the issue there was that the defendant was simply unable to pay the restitution. And this court noted that while the trial court judge may have had a noble motive in continuing the case to try to give the defendant a chance to get caught up, this court emphasized that 559.036.8 strictly limits the trial court judge's ability to hold a revocation hearing after the term of probation has expired.
But on Strauser, the court continued it 8 times.
Correct.
So we have a little bit different factual situation here. How do you reconcile that?
In Strauser, I think there was some language to the effect of that, basically, the statute solely concerns the court's ability to hold a revocation hearing. And I think the plain language of the statute says that it's very clear if you want to have the authority to revoke after the term has expired, you must have initiated the proceedings prior to the expiration, and then you must have made every reasonable effort to conduct the hearing prior to the expiration. There was also a recent case.
But the court in Strauser found that 8 continuances was not making every reasonable effort. Here we have a 6-week, 1 continuance. How is that convicting the trial court of not making every reasonable effort?
There are several other recent cases. Timberlake, I did not cite this in my brief. It's 419 SW3D224. In that case, the appellate court found that a 28-day lapse past the expiration date did not matter. And in fact, that court re-emphasized Strauser and said that it doesn't matter how many days it is. It doesn't matter whether it's 1, whether it's a year, whether it's multiple years. If the court has not made every reasonable effort to conduct the hearing prior to the expiration of probation, then the court loses jurisdiction on the expiration date.
And the language is not actually every reasonable effort. It says, shall for any further period which is reasonably necessary for the adjudication of matters arising before its expiration. So it's not, I mean, it may have been very reasonable in the broader context of your client to extend it until you could try the criminal cases, but it wasn't reasonably necessary in order to determine the probation revocation issues.
Correct. And in many cases I have seen, and I believe there is no law or court rule or case law which says that a probation court cannot rule on a laws violation prior to the defendant standing trial on the new case.
I mean, it may not. What the problem is, if you get what you're asking for, that means that people may not. Courts may hold probation revocation hearings and revoke probation, whereas they might not have had the additional criminal charge been resolved. So others may not be in a worse position should this court adopt your position in this case.
And certainly I understand that, and I think the court also addressed the same circumstances in Strouser with respect to restitution. But I think the legislative intent and the plain reading of the law puts an impetus on the trial court judge to make a timely ruling.
Would you have been ready to take up the probation violation hearing on October 7th?
I'm sorry?
Would you have been ready to take up the probation violation on October 7th?
I would have been had the court ordered it.
Did you have the police reports from the new law violation?
I did at that point.
Okay.
Did the court attempt to set it sometime between then and October 20th or shortly thereafter, but you were not available, or was there any attempt to set it before October 20th or within any reasonably necessary time thereafter?
No, there was really no conversation after the motion for bond reduction was denied. The court said, I'm putting this on December 2nd, handed a memo to me and the circuit attorney who was present at the time. We both signed it, and there was nothing else really said after that about the date. Now, I would also like to address several other issues. The respondent has suggested that any time a probation court enters an order suspending probation, that effectively relieves the court of having to make a ruling on the revocation hearing prior to the earned discharge date. Principally, the respondent relies on a recent case out of the Eastern District, State v. Robinson. The one thing I will say is that since Strouser, there have been several cases which have addressed Strouser's holding with respect to cases where there are earned compliance credits, and that would be State X. Rel. Amerine, v. Parker, and State X. Rel. Parrott v. Martinez. In both of these cases, the court found that the relevant date, the relevant expiration date, was not the five-year statutory maximum under 559.016, but rather it was the earned discharge date. And the respondent's argument, they're effectively stating that this court should ignore the earned discharge date and instead allow probation courts to hold revocation hearings up until 5 years after the date of plea. And I think that's just inconsistent with those decisions, and that if the court were to follow that suggestion, that this court would be effectively overruling those decisions.
Your time is up.
Thank you.
We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Respondent requests this honorable court deny relator's petition for writ of prohibition or an alternative writ of mandamus, and to rule that the respondent has the authority to hold a probation revocation hearing because the relator in this matter was not entitled to an earned discharge date of October 20, 2016, as his probation was currently and previously suspended, and respondent was in compliance with all statutory requirements under 559.036, 559.016, and 217.703. This case should be decided as a simple matter of statutory construction. First, Statute 217.703 states that a probationer cannot earn compliance credits while his term of probation is in suspension status.
Counsel, he doesn't claim any probation credits while he's in suspension. If you look at the appendix, page 11, that's the report from of those figuring out his earned credits, which can't be contested. And it says that as of that the October date was his date for discharge prior to the time of the suspension, and doesn't give him any credit for those months. It finds him suspended there, but it doesn't change the fact that prior to that time, the discharge date had been reduced to October 20th.
And that is correct, Your Honor. The discharge date.
So what does the suspension have to do with it then? He wasn't claiming anything during the suspension.
Because, Your Honor, the suspension according to 559.036, whenever a term of probation is suspended, it essentially tolls the probation period from running. So it stops the probation period from running.
So if it was suspended, it could be suspended for 5 years and the probation would still continue. Or is there some outside limit set beyond which the probation cannot extend?
Currently, there's not an outside limit that I'm aware of.
The five-year period set in the statute is the outside limit, isn't it?
The five-year statute under 559.016, yes, Your Honor.
This court doesn't allow the suspension of probation to contradict the statute, does it? Don't our cases say you can't suspend probation and that allows you to go beyond the revocation requirements of the statute?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't quite understand your question.
I thought our cases, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I thought our cases said suspending probation does not allow you to hold revocation hearings contrary to the language of the statute of 559.036.8.
Correct, Your Honor. And so in the event under that statute, the trial court must meet two prongs. First, they must manifest an intent to hold a probation revocation hearing prior to the expiration date. And also, they must make every reasonable effort to notify the probationer and conduct a probation revocation hearing prior to that expiration date, which was done here.
And so those apply whether or not the probation's been suspended.
Correct, Your Honor.
Why was the further period after October 20th reasonably necessary, as the statute says, in order to conduct the hearing?
Your Honor, based on the denial, I guess not based on, after the bond reduction hearing on October 6th, there was an off-the-record conversation between...
But on the record, because things have to be done in the record.
Correct, Your Honor. And so on the record, the cause was continued to December 2nd, and the defense attorney in that case, the relator, did sign off on that continuance and did not object to that continuance.
But our case is, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but doesn't the statute require you to hold the hearing by the date or get on the record? We're going to hold this hearing before this date if you've got a consent, if you want it beyond that point. But it doesn't let you do off-the-record things and then just without explanation in the record continue past the date, does it?
Your Honor, there is no explanation on the record about the discussion, but my argument would just be that the continuance, when he signed off on the continuance.
Why was it reasonably necessary? Are you saying it was reasonably necessary, or are you saying it was consent? Because those are different.
I'm saying
that reasonably necessary would apply if there's no consent. If you had consent, then it wouldn't matter.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. I understand. The continuance was reasonably necessary for the adjudication of matters before.
Why?
Because based on information that was relayed to the respondent, a matter that was pending could be wrapped up by that expiration date, by that December 2nd continuance date.
So if the court were to find that his probationary period ended on October 20th, would the trial court have any authority to revoke his probation?
Yes, Your Honor, because the probation is currently suspended. And because the probation was suspended on August 29th, which was actually approximately 54 days before the October 20th earned discharge date, it effectively stopped the probation from running, which rendered...
Well, where is your authority for that? That was the question Judge Breckenridge just asked.
The authority for...
That it stopped the probation from running. Because it can't do that past the expiration date, the final date for the probation.
Correct, Your Honor.
Let's not mix the words up. Is there a difference between the earned credit and probation running? In other words, is there a distinction between the discharge date and the... Now I'm confused, but what you're suggesting that the suspension, based upon the statutory language, stops those credits from earning or being considered prior to the revocation of a probationary hearing.
Correct, Your Honor. And the basis for that is case law. It's State v.
Robinson.
I'm sorry, Robinson v. State, which...
Is that an unpublished Eastern District opinion?
It was the mandate was issued on March 3rd, 2017.
Okay.
And there, the court held that if a defendant's probation is suspended, any subsequent... They can hold a probation revocation hearing after the expiration date if the two conditions of 559.036.8 are met.
So they still have to make every reasonable effort to conduct the hearing prior to the expiration of the period.
Correct, Your Honor. And I believe every reasonable effort was made in this instance. The defendant, the relator in this case, had an initial violation report from June 1st that the judge was made aware of. And the circuit attorney's office did not file charges until August 5th of 2016. And so 2 weeks after that, based on those files, the charges that were filed, the respondent then suspended his probation and simultaneously scheduled a probation revocation hearing for October 7th, which was prior to that expiration date of October 20th. So I do believe she made every reasonable effort, considering the fact that he didn't initially have files charged against him on that June 1st date.
So how do we get past October 7th hearing?
How do we get past the fact that that was continued?
It wasn't held on October 7th.
It was not, Your Honor.
And the failure to hold it on October 7th, isn't that an indication that every reasonable effort was not made to conduct the hearing prior to the expiration?
I do not believe so, Your Honor, basically because I believe had the relator not signed off on that continuance memo, I do believe that the probation revocation would have been heard on October 7th.
But that's a whole different question. That's whether there was consent, which that's a different question than whether every reasonable effort was made. And I think you're arguing that it was a reasonable decision to try to continue. It might have even been in his benefit, so both these charges could be worked out. But if the statute sets a final date by which you can't revoke after that, you have to revoke by then the question is not, was this a good decision or was it a wise decision, but did you make every reasonable effort to hold the hearing, which would be physically you couldn't hold the hearing then or there was some reason the person wasn't available, that's the reasonable effort. That's a different question than whether there was consent.
I do believe that there was a reasonable effort made, and in light of the charges, that every reasonable effort was made in between August and October.
How did the charges affect the reasonableness of the effort? I mean, why couldn't it have been held on November 3rd or October 29th or sometime in between there? Is there anything in the record showing a reasonable effort was made to schedule it sooner and it could not be scheduled for some reason?
There is nothing in the record that reflects the reasoning behind that, Your Honor, but I do respectfully argue that the record is incomplete and it actually lacks a lot of important pieces of information that would reflect the reasonableness and why it was reasonably necessary to continue to that December 2nd.
And have you filed that information with this court?
I have filed that information with this court, Your Honor, in the respondent's brief.
But you've referred to non-record matters in your brief.
Yes, Your Honor. So I'm sorry, I withdraw my earlier statement. I have not specifically filed the off-the-record or what the context that occurred, the discussions that occurred before the continuous date to December 2nd.
But the offense violation reports had not been resolved before October 7th?
The offense violation report, Your Honor?
Uh-huh, the underlying probation offense.
It had not been resolved yet, no. Are you referring to the pending case?
Yes.
It had not been resolved, no, I'm sorry.
Does the pending case have to be resolved before holding a revocation hearing?
It does not have to be resolved before holding a revocation hearing, Your Honor, but I believe that was the basis of I guess, a decision that was made in, amongst the parties. And I understand that that might be a consent issue, but aside from the consent issue, I do believe it was reasonably necessary in light of the situation to extend it beyond the October 2nd, 7th date.
I want to make sure I understand your argument as well. You cite Robinson, and Robinson suggests that when the probation is suspended, it's tolled.
Correct.
And therefore, the probation period is actually extended for the period of time that the tolling occurs. Is that your reading of Robinson?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And therefore, your argument is that the ever reasonable effort was made to conduct the hearing because the expiration of the probation period was extended due to the tolling period. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. I make arguments in light of the earned discharge date and that every reasonable effort was made prior to that date, and that is in response to Relator's arguments. But I do believe that the probationary term has not run. And
when would that date have run pursuant to that tolling? Did you calculate that?
Pursuant to the tolling, the date would have run on September. I'm sorry.
No, you're saying that it would continue to be tolled until the suspension was resolved when the probation revocation was heard and probation was revoked.
Correct.
So you never get into the issue. If that's true, then you never get into the Strasser issue, because Strasser only applies when you go outside the probation period.
That is correct, Your Honor.
But you can't extend it past the statutory period, so that begs the question. We have held you can't go past the 5 years. The ECC credits reduce the probationary period. Do they also reduce the five-year outside limit? Is there any other case addressing that, and what policy reasons or statutory reasons would we look at in figuring out the answer to that question?
Actually, the five-year maximum in this case would be September of 2018, and Robinson versus State does address.
Well, it's not published, so it's not precedential that I find.
Okay.
It's just a per curiam order.
Counselor, do you believe that the court could benefit from the truth of what happened on the off-the-record proceeding before issuing extraordinary writ?
Yes.
Making the writ permanent?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. I believe that there are very specific key pieces of information that are left out of the record. And here, even looking at the record on its face, I still believe that the court met both of the conditions under 559.036.8. But assuming the court needs more information, I do think that it is important to get that information because it details a lot more than I can explain because it was off the record.
Well, a quote from Strasser is that an order for probation suspension does not relieve the court from meeting both of the conditions provided by Section 559.036.8. Is that statement contrary to the ruling in Robinson?
That statement is not contrary, I don't believe, Your Honor, because that statement is effectively saying that the court still needs to meet those two requirements.
And the need to meet those requirements is not eliminated by suspending probation.
I'm sorry, can you rephrase the question?
The need to meet the requirements of 559.036.8 is not eliminated by an order suspending probation.
Correct, Your Honor.
So how does the order suspending probation benefit the state in this case?
It essentially stops the running of the probationary period.
But that argument is contrary to the statement in Strasser that even if you suspend probation, you still have to meet the requirements that you, I don't have the magic language in front of me, but that you make every reasonable effort to notify the probationer and to conduct the hearing prior to the expiration of the period.
Your Honor, I believe that if I'm hearing your question correctly, this holding in Strasser making it mandatory for the requirements to be met, regardless of suspension, I'm sorry, I lost my
You know, I think I can help. I apologize, I misstated earlier. There are apparently four Robinson opinions that were handed down in February and March.
Oh, okay.
So I found yours, and it is published. And it says that it's different because Strasser went beyond the five-year period.
Yeah.
And it's the question of, do ECC's credits reduce the period beyond which you cannot revoke probation or not? And so they tried to distinguish, whether correct or incorrect, they distinguished Strasser on that basis.
Yeah, and here we have not gone.
That was the question I was going to ask you.
Okay.
Did Strasser involve in her compliance credit argument or component? Or was it a hard deadline actual the entire time of the original probation had expired?
I do not believe Strasser involved earned compliance credits.
So can you address why that wouldn't, are we giving, the legislature set up these earned compliance credits and said it reduces the maximum period. Why would the suspension make some difference in that? Why would, in effect, you're not giving credit, are you, to all the earned compliance credits that the person earned?
When, I guess, a trial court suspends a term of probation, it's analogous to a initial violation report being filed or a motion to revoke, and in those cases, the probationer would not earn compliance credits, and so he would be essentially barred from earning. And I know the argument is not that he earned any compliance credits after probation was suspended here, but the Statute 217.703 and Robinson versus State address issues that, when read together, are based on or stand for the premise that if probation is suspended, even if you have earned an earned compliance discharge date, if your probation has been suspended prior to that, and in this case it wasn't a week before, it wasn't 2 days before, it was 54 days before, then you're not eligible for that discharge date.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I guess there are several issues I'd like to respond to. Strasser did address a case where the court had continued the revocation hearing past the five-year mark. But subsequent to Strasser, there are two cases where I believe this court and then the Eastern District have found that if a trial court judge continues the revocation hearing past the ECC date, then the judge can lose jurisdiction. And in both of those cases, I don't believe the five-year threshold was met. That was State X.
You're going to tell us the names of the cases.
Yes. State X. Rel. Amerine v. Parker. Citation on that is 490 SW3D 372, and then State X. Rel. Parrott v. Martinez ED 104007.
So both of them are Court of Appeals opinions.
Correct. Well, I believe Amerine was a Supreme Court decision, but perhaps I'm wrong about
How
that.
How do you spell Amerine?
It's AMORINE.
Thank you.
As far as a probationer's duty to object, Strasser has some language in it which says that the defendant does not have a duty to show the court that he's ready to proceed. He doesn't have to show prejudice. And I think if you look at all the cases which have addressed the authority to revoke probation after the term is ended, and there are many, there's a common fact pattern. And in all these cases, essentially what happens is there's a violation report, there's an order suspending probation, and the probationer shows up to court, and then the trial court judge continues the case, continues it, so on and so forth. And in every case that has examined this fact pattern, no court, neither this court nor any of the appellate courts, have ever stated that the probationer has a duty to object.
Well, counsel, if you had gone there on the 6th for the bond hearing, and bond had been denied, and you had said on the record, I would rather you continue the revocation hearing set for tomorrow out into the future so that we can resolve both the new case and the revocation all together. If that had been said on the record, are you saying we couldn't consider that in deciding whether the trial court's actions were reasonable?
Perhaps. I think the court could, but this new allegation is not only outside the record, it's not only what's in the record. I think it's specifically refuted by the record. If you look at the judge's statements and the order denying my motion, if you look at the proceedings in the Eastern District, the court's versions in all prior proceedings are consistent with what I have alleged.
And MRI was by this court, and it did involve ECCs. And that reduced the ultimate date.
Any other questions? Thank you.
I have nothing
case
further. Thank
you. Submitted.